Hi, I'm Abigail, and I'm addicted to money. So for the next 50 seconds, I'd like to feel dirty, inconsiderate, manipulative, and ashamed. I apparently agreed to play the game of life by the rules made by the rich in order to make them more rich. And because I feel powerless and out of control, I am asking you to listen to this ad for Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your computer or phone. Anchor will distribute your podcast wherever you can get podcasts. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. And everything you need to make a podcast is in one place. So download Anchor for free on the app or go to anchor.fm to get started. So yeah, that's all I have. Thanks for letting me share. What is up, weirdos? I'm Abigail, your host, and this is the Manic Pixie Weirdo. We are joined today with Miles Long from the Laughs and Wreck podcast. He also does streaming too, so check him out. We'll put all that in the description. And we are going to talk about scams. So yeah, let's just jump right in. Have you ever been scammed that you know of?
There have definitely been attempts, and it's funny because there's been different, it's happened on different scales, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's experienced the weird phone call with the guy from India telling you about how they have your social security number and there are crimes against you.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to confirm the social in order to avoid that. So I think we've all gotten that call.
Right. Or the IRS phone call. That one is pretty. Yeah, gotten that one too.
Yeah, that one's gossip. I love that one. But then I think there's less obvious scams. Like, I remember there's one that's going around like Tinder and stuff where they're like, oh, I can't talk here, but like, can you text me? And then you text the person, they have your number. And I think what they try to do is they try to sign in to your like whatever other dating service, where anywhere you'd put a credit card down, to take the information once they're logged in, and they tell you, oh, to confirm your number's legit or something, you have to send me the code that's going to be texted to you. And really what it is, it's a security code to bypass your shit.
And right. Yeah, never send anybody any codes, ever. If anybody's asking for a code that comes to your phone, never give it to anyone. Oh, my God.
It makes no little sense to it. Like, wait, why is Bumble sending me a code so you can verify my phone number? Explain that to me.
Right. I'm confused. Well, there was so, of course, you know, I've said this before. I've read two books. I read the book The Sting Man, and it's about the ab scam. Where this one insane con artist basically like helped the U.S. government take down a bunch of like rogue, you know, senators and representatives and stuff like that. He like got caught like one time in the 30 or something years that he did it. And I recommend it. Like, it reads like fiction. You read it and you're like, there's no way this happened. This is too insane. But then I started getting kind of like really interested in it, because I've been scammed. I've 100% been scammed. And I'm sure like the two times that I'm thinking of that I've been scammed, I'm sure I've been scammed more than that. But, you know, that I know of for sure. There have been two times. But then I read another book called The Confidence Game, and it basically talks about the psychology of how scams work on the brain. And we basically, everybody thinks they're like too smart, you know, to be like, and I get that because I fall into that quite often. But I just kind of want to, especially since they seem to be more prominent right now, I've noticed since COVID started, I've gotten a lot of like, spam calls and stuff like that. And those wonderful calls from people that are like, your warranty on your car is about to expire. I'm like, my car's a 2008. What are you talking about? But I don't know, like trying to raise awareness about it, but also just kind of be like, they're out there. These are like, what is your relationship with them? Like, have you ever been scammed that you know of? Or like, do you know somebody or anything like that?
So that's the other part of the story. Like, those are the common ones that I've seen, like, just mostly through, be it social media, apps, whatever, where people congregate. There's always going to be some of that, because when there's a congregation of people, there's going to be someone who's like, oh, cool, I can make money off of this. But
right.
I've actually had people attempt to scam me professionally.
So
this is a big one. MLMs. MLMs are 100% a fucking scam. I'm not sure.
I have no idea what that is. What
is that? It's a legalized pyramid scheme. So basically what happened.
Like Avon or Mary Kay.
Yes. So the only difference between what Ponzi did and what an MLM is that Ponzi didn't offer you a good or a service. He just said, if you give me money, I'll turn it into more money, right? So there was no real exchange of goods. That's why they said it's a scam.
Right.
MLMs use the same structure. The only difference is they legally have to give you some kind of service. That's the only difference. That's the only thing that doesn't make it illegal.
As long as
you get a fee, it's fine. And really, it's a bigger scam for the people working for them rather than the people on the receiving end, like the customers. Like, worst case scenario, if you're a customer, you just get, like, a shoddy-ass product, and that can have varying degrees of, like, being really bad. Like, if you get, like, shoddy leggings that look really ugly, like, all right, but you could throw that away. But if you're spending on, like, life insurance, I think that's way more criminal to have shoddy life insurance.
Absolutely.
Those were the companies that tried to hire me. So I used to do sales since I got out of college. I spent a long time doing sales. And there were numerous MLMs masquerading as legitimate insurance companies trying to recruit me. And there's a lot of them. Yeah, there's tons and tons of them. And you don't really know until you get in there. And then once you've seen the first one, you keep seeing it. And there was one I actually worked for a little longer than I should have because they were better at hiding it. You know what I mean? Like, I got in there and I was looking around. I was like, all right.
They have a better front. Yeah, they have a better front, you know.
Yeah. So the way it works, it's insane to me now to think, like, the first time I got sucked into it that it worked on me. But the way it works is I was working at a manufacturing company as a traveling salesperson. I don't know if you've ever been to, like, a Sam's Club and you see the demonstrations going on in the store, you know, where they do, like, the... Yeah, so I was the guy who did the vacuum cleaner demonstration, the one where they catch the bowling ball. Yeah, that was me.
Okay, cool. I kind of remember those guys, yeah.
I mean, they're still around, but that was me for a long time. And while I was doing work one time in San Antonio, I was out there and I was doing the end of my show and I was cleaning up, getting ready for the next set. And this lady approaches me. She's probably like Nigerian or something. Very, very dark black lady, clearly kind of one of those African accents. Mm-hmm. And she's dressed very, very nice, you know, very professional, all this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
She starts with, I forget what the lingo is, it's been a while, but they always start with something along the lines of, hey, you're pretty good at this. Are you keeping your options open? Or are you looking for income opportunities? Like something along those lines, you know? It's an actual like trained thing they tell you to say to people when you're trying to bring them in. I know it sounds cheesy now, but...
I just kind of envision myself, like if somebody came up to me and said something along those lines, I'd be like, I don't know what's happening right now. Like, what? Like, human beings don't talk to each other like this.
Sure. I mean, they have a way of doing it where it seems more casual. And then when you're, there's also the component when you're working at kind of a shitty job. Like, back then, this was a commission job. If I didn't sell, I didn't get paid, but I still had all the expenses of traveling. So if I didn't sell, I was actually losing money, but now they have like a base salary, but I don't do that shit anymore. But so they start with like, they purposely look for people with these kind of jobs to go, oh, wouldn't you like to make more money? And then you're like, yeah, no shit, I'd like to make more money.
Like, right? Wouldn't everyone? Doesn't everyone?
Exactly. And then they go with the line like, oh, you could be your own boss. Like, I started this a year ago and look how much money I'm making now. Like, that sort of thing to draw you in.
I don't know if you've ever seen those, I'm sure you have, they're all over YouTube, those like guru videos where people, you know, they're like right at the beginning and it's like, you know, most people don't know that, you know, I went from having $2 to like being a millionaire in 12 months, all through the affiliate program of, you know, whatever. And it's just like, really?
Yeah, no, it's the same energy for sure. That's always how they pitch it. And then they tell you, I can get you an interview. And I was like, fuck it. I mean,
right.
For free, you know, fuck it.
Well, the other thing too, though, is that it's like young people. It's generally like, I would assume it would be like young people, like right out of college or, you know, just trying to make it through college or something. I don't know. Cause it seems like young and old people seem to be the target market.
It depends on what you're selling, I found out.
Mm.
So when I was the first one, they actually got me in. I didn't pay for anything, fortunately, because it was an insurance thing. So they're like, oh, you got to do the training first and this and that. Really, insurance is probably a bigger time waster than anything because you're not having to buy inventory. You just have to go there, work, and then figure out it's bullshit. So then you just wasted however much time you were doing at that job. But the first one I got involved with was mostly older people. Like, I was the youngest dude in that room, like, looking around, people in their 30s, 40s. One guy was, like, 50-something. And I think it's because what they were handling primarily, it was an alternative to retirement funds. So what you were supposed to do is go to older people and tell them, hey, you know how your 401k is dependent on the stock market, so it kind of does this.
Right.
You know, it goes up and it's down. It's just dependent on how the market's doing at any given time. How would you like to secure your 401k in something a little bit more stable? And the idea what they were trying to tell people is like, well, when the market's on the rise, it'll lock in at a peak point. So if there's a sudden drop, you don't lose retirement money. It just holds steady at the peak. And so it'll eventually keep going up and up as the market gets better, right?
Right.
And so what you're trying to do is you have them transfer hundreds of thousands of dollars over into whatever it is you're selling. So generally, if you're like a 20-something-year-old coming to these people, they're not going to buy that, right? They're not going to be like, oh, yeah, take my $2 million of retirement and put it into your whatever account. Yeah.
Right.
So I think age helped with that. But there was another one I was going to. It was more just, this was like a second attempt. After I got out of that one and I knew what it looked like, I got invited to the same thing. And when I saw the format, I was like, oh, shit. All right. Well, but that one was younger people. It was all younger people. And it was insurance, but it was like, I don't know. I think it was more like just basic life insurance type stuff, like life and health. I think it depends on who your market is. They'll target specific kinds of people, right?
Right.
Because,
well,
like, you want older people talking to older people. But if it's like, you know, younger people in their 20s, then, you know, there's just more of an energy thing that when you're 20, you're a little bit more lively.
Yeah.
They want you to sell with energy. So they want you to, like, yeah, get the other person excited, you know? I think that's why they target people. Also, of course, income inequality at that age is pretty high. Like, when you're getting first jobs, it's never going to be as much as you get later on down the road as you build your career. So,
right. Well, one of the things that I noticed while I was reading that book, The Confidence Game, was in the book, she like ran through a whole bunch of like a long list of things that like con men do to make you feel like secure, you know, like, and that like feed into that ego that we all have, you know? And as she was going through the list, I got the audiobook. I couldn't help but be like, I feel like all of these same tactics are used in Marketing 101, in Wall Street, in, I mean, so it's almost like, well, what is a scam then? Because it's like these skills are, I mean, on the one hand, I could see that's how someone would kind of try to spin it where it's like, well, Wall Street's using their powers for good, or, you know, like it's legit. And it's like, but is it? Is it though? Is it? Is it?
I had a buddy of mine, he was on one of the streams, but he's a recurring guest. His name is Jim. He's from a radio show. He does a Friday night music party. He's a cool dude. But he was telling me he used to do a job on Wall Street. And he used to do, he used to work with people on Wall Street. Let me rephrase. He used to work for, I think, like AC company, like a big one out of New York. And so they had big clients who were like, you know, hedge fund managers, major stockbrokers who all worked on Wall Street.
Whoa.
And he was like, those were the shittiest customers I have ever worked with in my life. Like, they would try anything not to pay their bill and still get service. Like they would have 3-hour meetings where the guys in the suits would be like, hey, so I have a problem. Our service was interrupted for 3 months. What happened there? Well, you have an outstanding bill of $20,000, so we shut off the service. And they're like, oh, well, okay. But they were trying to negotiate for service without paying.
I know.
It was like, and you're... what?
Well, and then probably the most famous scam of all would be like Enron, you know. And
oh, yeah, that was a good one. Oh, yeah.
And you're just like... Well, I guess the most famous recent one, other than Enron, would be the housing market.
You know, it's shocking how many industries, how many markets have, like, it's either there's a fertile breeding ground for scams or there's a scam built into it. Like,
right.
Cable. Cable is huge. I used to
what
work
is
in
this? Oh, cable. Oh,
yeah.
Really?
It's
tell me
really
about
bad. So when I used to do... door-to-door work, actually. It was for a subsidiary that worked with AT&T. So we technically couldn't say we're from AT&T because then there's some legal stuff that we're technically, we're contracted right. by AT&T, right? And our job was to go around and sell everything, phones, TV, internet, just anything someone would buy. We could even do stuff like U-verse, even though they weren't really doing U-verse that much. And because we were a third party, we could also sell like satellite internet and various other stuff from affiliate companies.
Right.
And you learn so much about how much cable is a scam. It's insane. So the way it works is there are basically natural monopolies wherever you go. Like if you move to an area, there's only like two or three options for cable. There's a reason for that. It's because the larger companies tend to swoop in, buy huge swaths of the land, lay their cables in, and then it's more difficult for other companies to come in behind them and also try to lay those cables in, try to compete in the same market. So it's like anywhere you go, it's like, all right, do you want to pay for Comcast or do you want to pay for AT&T? And they both do the same tactic. What they do is once you sign your contract, they give you the best terms you're going to get. And you're like, okay, this seems reasonable. And then as time goes on, they keep jacking up the price. So it gets more and more expensive. So essentially, it puts the customer in a position where the only thing you can really do to keep your costs low is try to stay with one for as long as you can afford it, and then jump to the other company, who's the only other option in your area, until they get too expensive. And you're just in this loop of, like, jumping back and forth until your bill gets, like, $300. And then you go to the other guy until they start charging you $300. It's terrible.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I've kind of said that. Right around the time when Hulu Live came out, where it was like, get all of it, you know, through us, I tried it. And I was like, what if I do this? What if I don't have internet, or I don't have a cable, or like, and nobody has a landline anymore. So I don't even know why that's still a thing.
Sometimes they did.
Yeah. I know.
That's part of the scam, is they want you to pay for as much of their shit as they can.
No. The internet company that we had, like, we don't have an internet company right now because I'm firmly planted in the I'm pissed off at internet companies because we got screwed through the, like, terms and services and stuff. It's been a whole thing. But, yeah, they made me. They were like, it's... somebody came to the door and was like, it's bundled, you know, and it's like this amount of dollars a month and you get internet, phone, and cable, and like some insane number of channels that no one would ever watch that, like much TV. And I was like, well, is it cheaper if we like don't use the phone because we don't have a landline? And the guy basically was like, it doesn't matter if you like disconnect the landline, like the phone part of the bill, like it's, we're not changing the price, like the price is the price whether you use all of this or like one of the services. And I was like, but
that's
no one
thing.
Has
that's
a landline
a it's only a half truth. Like
so
one of the things we were trained to do is when I was doing door-to-door stuff, if I came across a Comcast house, let's say, and I know they're bundled with internet, TV, most of the time, if they're at a certain package level, they have to have a phone line, or they might try to get a cheaper price by including the security service in with it that Comcast offers. So I already know generally like what they have and roughly how much they're paying, given how much time that they've been associated with the company, right?
Okay, yeah.
So one of the things we're trained to do is, like, let's say I go in and I try to do a full swap, like get them to trade everything over to AT&T, and they don't go for it. But one thing I'm trying to do is say, hey, look, I get it. You're attached to your cable package. I get it. Cable's awesome. There's so many great channels on that package. What if I did this? What if I got you cheaper internet, and then I hired one of my guys? I can call them on the phone right now, and they can get on Comcast with you to negotiate to get rid of that landline so you're not paying for it anymore. So all you have to pay for...
Okay, pause.
...and the TV.
Right, pause. Would you actually, like, call your guy, or are you... Is this one of those situations where you, like... call your mom and then you like go smoke a cigarette, call your mom and are like, and then you come back and you're like, I called the guy and like it's all cool now? Or is it like a real guy?
Yeah, we've literally done it. We've called Comcast. If you just argue with them enough, they'll do it. Like, that's the thing, they'll do it. There's no reason they have to be bundled at all. They just make you pay for it. So if you get pissed enough and you throw a big fit, they go, all right, I guess we'll unbundle it. Like, there's no reason for it.
Wonderful. Well, that's good to know, because when we were having all the problems with our internet and like cable and stuff, I felt really bad because I felt really bad. I felt like a Karen. I felt like I was very pissed and very snippy and very rude. And I did the whole like, I'm definitely going above you. Like, I need to talk to somebody above you because this is not getting us anywhere. And I ended up getting what I wanted, but I felt super bad. But it's good to know that, like, I don't really need to feel that bad because it's, like, something they can just do. It's not something that, like, I actually have to have.
The reason they make you go through all those people is to try to just get you to run out of gas. They figure that if there's three people you got to go through, if you get tired at the second person, well, then they get you still paying for the thing that you're hooked up to that you don't want, you know?
Like, yeah.
The whole structure is designed to just screw the customer at every turn.
Well, so, I'm one of those horrible, horrible people that if there's a problem like that, you're not making me go away. Like, I will call you every single day. I will call you multiple times a day. I will leave messages. Me and your secretary will be friends. Like, I am that horrible person. And I've definitely had scenarios where, like, I've done that for like 2 weeks and it's like, I know they just want me to go away. They just want me to go away. And then all of a sudden there's like some magic thing that happens right around that 2 week mark. And they're like, fine, I guess we'll like call you back or whatever. I mean, but I'm the minority. I assume I'm in the minority. I assume most people give up. I don't know if that's true, but I would assume.
Yeah. Cause I mean, I've had customers who were literally willing to sign anything if I could give them more money. Like, it was crazy the terms they would agree to just to save some money. Like, that's how battered they were from going through customer service over and over and over again and always getting the same bullshit. Like, oh, there's a problem with your cable. We got to send out a technician. That's going to be a $100 service charge. And then they don't do anything. And so they call back. They're like, hey, you sent your tech. You didn't fix it. They're like, oh, we'll send another one. That's a $100 service charge. And people
Yeah, it was a nightmare because that's sort of what happened with us. Like, we signed up and everything was cool for like 2 or 3 months. Like, it was cool for like a while. And then all of a sudden we got a bill in the mail and it was like $500. And I was like, whoa, this is not right. Like, at all. And I like read through everything and like talked to some people. And it was basically what I found out was that they were charging us for the maintenance. That's how they were able to keep their fee so low, is they were charging us for the but the whole thing was no contracts, no fees, like no, all of that stuff. And I was like, so this is fraud. This is just fraud. It's false advertising, which is fraud because you are charging me hidden fees for the maintenance. You just called it something different.
Yeah. Now, there's a lot of that, actually. Like, there's a bunch of bullshit fees that you'd be surprised. Like, by the time you end up signing up for a given cable company, you probably end up paying, depending on the company, anywhere from like $40 to $100 in fees. Just for like, oh, we got to push the button on the box and this and that. And here's the thing. Oh, man, my easiest sales ever were internet, because Comcast just straight up lies to its customers about their internet. Their internet is
really
fast. Yeah. So they'll tell you, oh, we'll give you super fast internet. Do this, do that. You know, we got however many megabits of speed. The reality is when they lay those lines down. So a lot of the way that internet works, it depends on the line you're working with. Like, the reason that you have standard internet versus fiber, it has a lot to do with the material they lay in the ground and how it hooks up to your house. Fiber is a thinner line. It's the material they use allows the signals to move faster. And there's only one line typically per house. They designate a line just for you. With regular internet, there's a box at the end of the block, and everybody shares the same internet. So if there's a high traffic time, your internet slows down because everybody's trying to use the same line, and you're all hooked up. So it's just a traffic jam of everybody trying to be on the internet. But with Comcast, it's even worse. If you have regular internet, and they tell you, oh, let's say they give you, I don't know, 100 megabit speed internet, which is halfway decent. Oh, excuse me. The actual line that runs to your house is only good for about 50 megabit speed. And then what they do is at headquarters, they just send a signal boost to try to artificially inflate the speed to make it faster. So 100 megabit speed is the peak at the highest. When it's in overdrive, it's at 100. But really, you're idling about like 60, 70 at best. It's really bad, but you're paying for 100.
It's all a scam. It's all a scam, you guys. It's just all a scam. They've found a way to make everything either illegal scam or, you know, a slap on the wrist scam. Yeah. I mean, that's just, it's expensive to be poor, I guess. I don't know.
It's crazy how many ways they find it, like, screw the poor. When I worked in door-to-door sales, actually, for the internet, you would be shocked some of the things people got away with in calling them sales. Right. There was this one guy. Who worked for the company. He was like some hotshot. Like he would go out and do like 10 sales a day, and the rest of us would like get our 1 to 3. And my manager at the time took me aside. He's like, yeah, I know that guy. Don't trust him. I was like, why? Apparently this guy, what he did to make some sales one summer, he goes into this neighborhood full of retirees and he starts punking out old ladies, telling them, hey, you know what? You either switch your cable package, or I'm going to bring my guys in here. We're just going to tear up everything, and you won't have cable, TV, internet, nothing. It's a complete switch over. If you don't switch now, it's all gone. And he would pressure them into doing it. And of course, when they found out, they were pissed. But he still worked for that company. That happened 3 summers before I met him. He was still working for the company. I was like, how is that legal? How is that guy not fired? Like, what? That's ridiculous.
Listen. I'm 27 years old, and I understand that that's, like, not a lot of time on planet Earth, but in that short amount of time, I've learned a couple of things, and one of those is just because it's unethical does not mean it's illegal, and that seems to be, it's like I really miss when I knew nothing.
Sign a contract under duress. That's literally what he's doing.
So yeah, you can't do that.
That's some shaky-ass legal
just
ground.
You can't do that. I mean, not to mention that these were elderly people. So I would, if I was a lawyer, if I were their lawyer, I would argue state of mind that you cannot, under duress and state of mind. You can't,
They would look for people with, like, mental disabilities and, like, try to sell them cable. Even though they weren't technically, like, they were functional enough to, like, be able to live on their own, but they were not able to fully comprehend the terms of what they were signing. You know what
I mean? Right.
But they still had the power to sign that contract because they were living independently. But, like, they would target those people 100%.
Yeah, so those are the scams that we have now. I mean, there's some, like, fun ones that I read about where there was, like, this guy who's this Hungarian con man, and he, like, sold the Eiffel Tower twice. And, yeah, and you're just like, okay, I mean, honestly, whoever tried to buy the Eiffel Tower, they're probably not that smart to begin with, but, I mean, like, so that's like a fun scam. That's like a scam that happened a really long time ago. And then I'm like, okay, I can laugh about that. But stuff like that with like, one of the other ones, apparently, like the famous Nigerian email situation, apparently that started with like some 14-year-old kid back in like that lived in like Ohio, and it started out as like a mail fraud, because what he did was he would pretend to write like handwritten letters to people, and but he would say stuff like I only need like $1, but if you send out 1,000 letters and people and you you write the sob story and then you but that's or if you're like I need a, one pair of blue jeans and like $1, then all of a sudden you now have, you know, 1,000 pairs of blue jeans and $1,000. So, you know, I mean, it's like, but that, I mean, but that was how that started. And apparently, like, they traced it back and it was this like 14-year-old kid in like Ohio that like started this. But then it just sort of escalated to like the internet. So that's like, that was like the first Nigerian email prince scam guy. And then it like graduated to the internet. And now it's like just so, I feel like the internet, as wonderful as it is, has made stuff like so much more complicated as far as scams go, because now it's just like, I feel like it's so much easier. And the fact that it seems like everybody's just like, fuck it, there are no rules, we're just gonna do whatevs.
I mean, it's so hard to track cybercrime. That's the thing. Like, I think women who are harassed on the internet find this out firsthand, where they're like, oh, this guy's stalking me on Twitter or whatever, he's, you know, trying to find out where I live, and the cops come, they're like, well, what do you want me to do? Because, like, it's so hard to backtrack that. But then again, that's their job. Like, they should have a unit for that shit in the building.
Right, you know? Exactly. Oh, my gosh. Speaking of, it's so weird that you brought that up. Because, so, it was the weirdest thing. When my husband and I moved to where we live now, I had my own apartment, and we, like, we're common law married, so it's not, like, all official or anything. You know, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's not important. But when we were going to pack up my apartment that I had before we moved in together, I noticed that I was missing like really weird, like random stuff, like laundry detergent and paper towels, just like really weird, random stuff like that. And I remember packing it up going, I think somebody's been in my apartment. And my husband was like, why? And so I told him, and he was like, hun, like they're not gonna take like toilet paper and laundry detergent, like that's not what people break into an apartment for. And I was like, you're probably right. Fast forward, we get everything done, we moved in and unpacked and everything. Come to find out, I was right. So on him, they took my laptop, my iPad, old tax returns, copies of my social, like, I mean, miss like big stuff, like big stuff. And then last year, or I guess it wasn't last year, it was 2019 Halloween, the day of Halloween, I'll never forget this. I started getting a bunch of like text messages and like Skype messages from these random numbers. And they were basically like, if you want your stuff back, like you have to like send us dirty photos and like basically do, you know, like all this other stuff. And I was, and we can ruin your life. We've got, you know, like sent me pictures of like my stuff. And like, you know, obviously it was a laptop that I've had since I was like, you know, 12. So it has a, you know, a whole bunch of stuff from my teenage years, like my crazy wild, you know, all that stuff. And it's just like, and I remember calling the cops, and somebody came to my house, and I like showed them everything, like, you know, told them I'd filed police reports, like my credit was locked, you know, like all, like everything is on super max secret squirrel status lockdown. And basically the cop was like, unless you know who this person is, there's like nothing we can do. I was like, so I'm just fucked. And the guy was like, yeah, I mean, unless you know who it is, where they are, then there, we can't do anything, because we don't know, you know, if where this person is, we don't know who they are. We don't, they're just claiming that they have all this stuff. I was like, but like their pictures, like you can see that they've sent me pictures of like, you know, my stuff. And it just came back as like, no, like there's literally nothing we can do. So it's just out there now. Like all my stuff is just out there now. And I was just shocked at like the police, just their whole like, no, like it's good that you said something, but I mean, we can like, you know, write a page of paperwork, but there's like nothing else to do. And I was like, cool.
Claims and stuff. They like generally don't do anything. I remember my dad. Back before he died, he had a guitar, and he had had this guitar for decades. He was a big musician, and it was going to actually be something that was passed on to me. But what happened was, let me give some context. This was a Fender from the 70s that was specifically like decked out to look just like Lenny Kravitz's guitar, with the orange and then the black pickguard, specific pickup put in it. It was an original 70s Fender. It was beautiful, beautiful guitar. And at the time, my mom was going to this church, and so she kind of dragged us all over there. And they do a lot of live music stuff. Mm-hmm. And one of the guys in the band, he's a younger dude. You know, he's kind of the rotating guitarist, because there's a lot of different groups that play. So they tend to insert certain musicians regularly. He was one of those guys. And he asked my dad to borrow the guitar, because at the time, we were all musicians, and we all played a lot of stuff, so we had a ton of musical equipment.
Oh, yeah.
So we let this guy borrow the guitar. And then all of a sudden, like, weeks later, my dad was asking for the guitar back, and he was like, oh, I'm still using it, still using it. More weeks go by. Hey. All of a sudden, there's a break-in at the church. What happened was all the musical equipment was stored in this locked closet. Uh-huh. And then all of a sudden, there's, like, a call to the police, and there's an investigation, and the door lock's been, like, broken or whatever. And all the other equipment, mind you, there was hundreds of thousands of dollars of equipment in there. Speakers, mixers, drum sets, electronic drum sets, varying guitars. Guess what's the only thing missing?
Right, the only thing that's missing. Yeah.
It's not even the most expensive piece in that closet, mind you.
Right.
Then we find out that he has a contact. So what happened was we ended up filing a police report, because I think he had the email transactions. So it established a timeline. So there was someone at, I think they were a criminal investigator. They worked with the courts. So they weren't a police officer, because the police officers wouldn't do anything. But the private investigators would, on behalf of the DA, because our DA is one of those like, ooh, hard line on crime. So she was willing to take the case to, you know, build that reputation.
Uh-huh.
So the criminal investigator goes to work. And it turns out this guy knows somebody at a pawn shop. It's a fence. They buy anything and everything illegal. And, you know, so happens to be friends with the guy. You know what I mean? So this isn't the first time he's done this. But, I mean, it was shocking. We never even got the guitar back, mind you. And they never busted the pawn shop, which is weird, because they've been watching it for years. And it's like, motherfucker, what do you need?
Yeah.
Go in there.
What are you doing? Yeah. Exactly.
The police slacking on that was just insane to me. I was like, wait, you've been watching this pawn shop for 3 years. You know this guy's bought illegal shit into there and sold it before. Like, what are you waiting? That's not probable cause? What?
Right,
what,
how?
Jesus.
I don't understand. Right. Well, I mean, I just watched this Netflix documentary. This is a little bit off topic, but whatever. It's called The Pharmacist. You should watch it. It's like a docuseries. It's really good. Like, whoever did that, it was done very well. I forget what the man's name is, but he's a fucking national hero. But he sounds like me if I was like an older, like, Louisiana male. Like, that's who this guy is. And I was just like, I love this guy. Vigilante all the way. But basically what happened was, like, his son died of, like, complications from, like, a drug overdose, or, like, a drug deal gone wrong or something like that, you know, blah, blah, blah. He went and he looked into it. He, like, helped the police catch the killer or whatever. And then, like, he couldn't, like, shake the itch, you know, like, help. And so he's being a pharmacist, he started noticing more, like, oxycodone prescriptions coming in, and they were all coming from this, like, one doctor. And, like, long story short, spoilers if you haven't seen it, there gets to this part in the documentary where he's like, they were not, like, the police were not moving fast enough. I've called the FBI, I've called the CIA, I've, like, and every Homeland Security, I mean, just everybody that this guy could think that he could call, the IRS, you know, he's like, we get him on mail fraud or something, you know, whatever. And you have these, like, people that they're interviewing, and they're all going, they're all basically just, like, telling the documentary people, you know, he doesn't know what he's really doing. Like, he doesn't, you know, the public doesn't know all of the various and sundry pieces that go together that, like, create this thing. So, and basically, and he was just like, no, dude, there is this woman who is prescribing, like, 4,000 oxycodone pills, like, a day, or it was something like just insane. And he like had proof and like suspicions, and he was like talking to people, and he was like, I don't like, they're not moving fast enough. Like people, more people are going to die if like the feds don't get in here and like do something. And it's just the police officers just, you know, or the, not even the police officers, but like the, you know, the FBI and like the DEA and everybody's just like, listen, you know, like we've been watching this one doctor for like, you know, this doctor that he's, you know, caught on to for like 4 years. And it's like, well, then what do you need? Like, what are we waiting for? What's happening? I'm so
like,
happy.
They're always like, we don't have enough yet. It's like, well, wait a minute. Like, first of all, what defense is he going to launch to like make all this go away? You know?
Exactly. Well, the other thing too is they're like, we have to build a case. It has to be, you know, just very. It has to be airtight and everything. And it's like, okay, I understand that you think that that's what needs to happen, but given the fact that I have watched God only knows how many true crime, like, you know, CIA investigation style things where there's some poor person sitting in, you know, it has been accused of a horrific crime, and all the prosecution has is like, we think it was this dude because the piano wire, because the wire that was used to kill this other person was a piano wire that was the same type of piano that this person had in their house. And it's just like, and they get a conviction. And I'm like, so what do you need? What is it?
Exactly. It's like if there's not enough pressure, well, then they need to take their time. But the minute there's like a little bit of like public pressure, yeah, they're like, well, all we got is like teeth indentions and circumstantial evidence. I think this is enough to take to court, you know?
I know. I'm like, I don't know what's happening anymore. Like, either you've got it or you don't. Like, what do you need to be wasting 4 years like looking at? Like, who are you helping? You're not helping anybody. Like, what is happening? I just don't, which again, kind of seems like a scam to me. It's like, what are we paying for? I don't know.
I mean, there's another thing that kind of dovetails nicely into this and kind of gets us more towards like the scammy end, which is rehab clinics. Rehab clinics in the United States. Holy shit. So
yes.
If you don't know this, rehab clinics are not based or beholden or regulated in any way to where the people in rehab clinics have to have their treatments based on science. They can literally be based on whatever the fuck they want them to be. And it's basically so that they can just charge insurance companies for medications that they get kickbacks from.
Okay, this is terrifying for multiple reasons. I'm going to need you to continue because I've been to treatment. And when I left, I remember my parents or my mom specifically going, they were just trying to suck as much money out of us as like we were so glad when you left because it was just like the sucking sound of money. And I was like, what could they possibly be charging you for? I thought it was covered by insurance. My mom was like, we don't even know.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Some of it's ambiguous. Like sometimes insurance companies will pay for certain treatments, and that's why the clinics will offer a treatment like that, but they'll charge you for other treatments that are not covered. So usually it's a bit of both. There's some insurance coverage, and then there's also out-of-pocket costs associated with that. Not only that, if your insurance pays for the medications, a lot of the times the pharmaceutical sales reps, they're offering kickbacks to the rehab companies who use those drugs on their patients. So every time you buy the medication, they get a little something extra. There's lots and lots of ways these rehab monies make money off of people. But here's the thing. The treatment they're offering isn't based on anything. They literally take people out to like farms or something. And they're like, all right, pet the horse. Do you still want heroin? Oh, you do? Okay,
yeah.
Well, let's try basket weaving.
No, for people who think he's joking, no, that's pretty much, yeah, that's it.
True.
That's what it is. I mean, speaking of a horse, there was a time when I was there where they called it equine therapy. Yeah. And did we get to ride the horse? No, we did not get to ride the horse. We got to pet the horse, just like you said. And then it was like, and it was like for an hour and a half or something. And then there was another time where they like brought puppies in and it was like, play with the puppies. It's animal therapy. And I can't help but like, again, is it just, are they just coming up with more ways to like scam? Like, is anything real?
Well, I mean, like none of those treatments are covered by insurance. So that's all out of pocket cost. And the worst thing is, they lie about their recidivism rates. So that way, when they market it to other people, they're like, yes, we have 100% success. But then most of that success is based on them just calling people and then like heavy guilt tripping them. Like, did you fall off the bandwagon or did you fall off the wagon? And the people feel like pressured into saying yes. But there was a whole segment piece on Last Week Tonight with Oliver. You know,
Oliver. Yeah.
Oliver. There we go.
Yeah.
And he was actually brought on people who went through these rehab programs, and they said, like, oh, yeah, I mean, I just lied. Like, I didn't want to feel bad, so I just lied to the dude on the phone. But they counted anyway. Like, there's no regulation at all. It's really, really bad. It's that needs to change real fucking quick. Because, unfortunately, that leaves everybody in a position where there's no real treatment for addiction, which is a very serious problem. There's like, nothing there.
Absolutely. I mean, it's so bad. That's horrible. That's absolutely horrible. Well, and then, I mean, now, it's all coming out. There's a lot more push. We talked about this on, like, the sobriety stuff, but, like, with AA, like, the anonymous programs, how that, like, it's really not as great as, like, everybody says that it is. It's definitely helped a lot of people.
Years, though, they've been definitely fudging the numbers on that.
So yeah,
this known quantity now, but
yeah, but it's starting to slow. It does seem like it's starting to slowly seep out that, like, yes, it has helped a lot of people, and I'm so happy for you if that system has helped you. As it turns out, though, it has not helped a significant amount of people that just sort of. I guess it's the we just don't talk about it kind of situation. I don't know. Like, how do you...
The problem here is, so we actually have a working model on how we can improve treatment for addiction. It already exists. In the Nordic countries, specifically I think in Norway, what they did is they have drug clinics now. So they've decriminalized, not only decriminalized, they've legalized a lot of drugs so that now they have like dispensaries where you show up, do all the drugs you want, there's a nurse on site and stuff. But because the government's involved, they now also fund research for addiction. And what they figured out is they have a system of treating addiction that is a panel of – it's an individualized panel of doctors, all who specialize in addiction in one way or another. And they look at an individual, and then they confer and find the best treatment. It works. It works really well, which makes a lot of sense. When if you have five experts for one person with addiction, of course they're going to find the best solution. So
yeah,
I mean, we already have – model, but for some reason we don't want to employ it. I think it's mostly because there's so much pushback against like social safety nets, and there's just this stigma against addiction where it's like, oh, it's their own fault, you know, bad choices, bootstraps harder, all that bullshit.
I know. I'm totally with you. Well, see, that's sort of my, I guess I'm sort of caught in this whole situation of what the fuck are we doing? Like, as a country, what are we doing? I don't even know anymore, like, what's happening. Because to me, it's just like, okay, you want to be the, like, okay, no, oh, sure, we just decided that I guess we wanted to be the greatest country, I guess, okay. But if that's truly what you want to be, then we need to start, like, addressing some of these problems. Like, and the scams that are rampant in the legal ones, like you're saying, treatment programs, the cable stuff. And guess what? We are not the end all and be all of everything. Other countries have better ideas, and we need to be like, hey, Norway, what's up? Can you teach us like how to do whatever the thing is that you're doing with addiction? Because we're not doing so hot.
Exactly. No, I mean, it's ridiculous. Our last president literally scammed the public and nobody said shit about it. He literally scammed the public because he's like, oh, we got to fight this addiction fucking fraud. Send me money in these letters and emails. And then in the fine print, it's like, well, after your first $8,000, then it goes towards the legal team. But the rest of that goes to Donald Trump. And nobody said shit. People defended him. They were like, no, he needs that money. This is an important cause. It's like
really, the self-proclaimed billionaire needs more. What? I cannot think of if there was ever a sign that has like flashing red blinking lights and arrows pointing at it saying scam, it's that. Like, that's what that is.
We literally elected a con man, and then he scammed the country for 4 years. Like, he was like, oh, I'm not going to release my tax returns. Why don't you want to release your tax returns? Oh, it turns out that you're broke because what you do is you foreclose on property, build debt, and then use that as a tax evasion. Like, that's what you've been doing for decades. You're basically broke. So you scammed the country into thinking you're rich, which part of that was the marketing done for, like, The Apprentice stuff to be, like, the savvy business guy. Turns out you're just a scammer who can literally be bought off by other countries if they offer you a big enough fucking licensing deal on their buildings. Like, it's ridiculous how just normalized this has become and how okay with it. And it seems like people treat it as like, oh, well, that's just the business, right? Like, MLM, that's just business. If it's like, oh, this guy over here, he does, I don't know. What's another good scam? Did you hear about the people who do the investment scams? The ones, basically what they do is they get like a big, big, big database full of emails. And they start emailing people and say, hey, these are my stock picks for the week or whatever. And so some people, like, let's say you send out 10,000 emails. Let's say half of those people spend $5 on your stock picks. And these are random stock picks. They're not actual, like, investment people. They don't know shit about this. But the ones that happen to do well that week, and they send out multiple batches, right? So you've got, like, five batches in circulation of 10,000 each, 5,000 in each of those investment stocks. And some of those are eventually going to do well.
So probability. Something is going to...
But then what they do is they send out another set of stock picks and another set of stock picks to these same branches. And eventually what happens is it whittles down to like maybe 100 people across all these batches who are like, holy shit, you predicted every single one of these correct. And then they start putting down big boy money. They start putting down tens of thousands of dollars into this investment firm to invest their money for them. And then they just block everything, take their money and run. It's really bad. But...
I mean, that's a little bit more, that feels like more of the, I guess, like the middle income level of like the Bernie Madoff, as far as like investment scams. He's like, you know, the billionaire classes or like rich people's version of.
He built that reputation up for a long time to run in those circles.
It was like 20 years or some nonsense. He was up to be chairman of the Fed.
Yep.
People wanted him to be chairman of the Federal Reserve. I mean, to be perfectly honest, I feel like most of the people that like run the Fed, I mean, the guy under Obama that ran the Fed was fucking the ex-president of Deutsche. Like,
Jesus Christ.
So, I mean, yeah. Obama's pick for the chairman, I'm pretty sure he was either Deutsche or Credit Suisse. He was like the ex president or something. I was like, perfect, cool. So I mean, Bernie Madoff, go right along. That just makes sense if those are the picks that we have. Isn't that like, what have we done that we have? It's like we said earlier, it's expensive to be poor. And we have just come up with, it's like every single possible thing that you can think of is either there's a scam, like you said, built into it, or someone has found a way to make a side scam of it. Like, I read an article and it was like, monthly subscriptions are like the newest thing.
They are. I used to do telemarketing for a little while, and they would make you push these subscriptions for like nothing, but they would give you, that was the biggest like sell. Like, so the way it worked for me, whenever I'd be on the phone, I got paid for talking hours, but it was like shit pay. It was like 30 cents a fucking talk minute or something like something ridiculous. And then they're like, oh, but if you sell these extra things and you sell the magazine subscriptions, we'll give you like $3 for every subscription you sell. So that's how you actually make money. And of course, you have to tell them like legally, oh, this kicks in after 30 days or whatever, where they'll pick up your billing. And then I figure out later, it's almost impossible to cancel the damn things. You got to go through like three people. And they're all like, oh, are you sure? They make it as difficult as possible to get rid of these fucking subscriptions so that they can just keep charging you for them. It's ridiculous. It's completely fucking crazy.
Oh, but, well, they do that with, I had an app that was similar to that, or it wasn't mine, but I was like helping my mom get this app. It was when my little sister was like real little. She had, it's called like ABC Mouse or something. And we ended up having to like, it was like $12.99 a month or like $12.95 or something. And we couldn't get it off the iPad. Like we got it off the iPad, but it kept charging her. Even after she thought she like, my mom thought she like canceled everything. We ended up having to like call Apple, like iTunes, and like go through them to get it done. And so it's just like, well, now we've just come up with ways to like add extra steps.
Yeah.
So they're just unnecessary. But it's the same thing. It's that same. It takes you. And by, I think it's that same thinking of, you know, maybe during, at some point down this line, people, they'll just get sick of it and hang up and go, screw it, just charge me the $12.
Yeah, it's really bad. I don't know. I think what's happened is that the way that this country seems to function best is when there is a lower class that the upper class can take advantage of in one way, shape, or form or another. Usually it has to do with, well, we're going to have lower class people run our businesses for us, essentially, and pay them shit, like Amazon, right? Like how many poor people make Amazon work?
Another legal scam.
Like, Jesus Christ. Have you seen the antitrust shit they've been trying to push in Alabama?
What is this?
So in Alabama, one of their, I think it's in Bessemer, one of their branches is going to unionize. They're going to vote on it. They actually tried to stop it legally, but the courts upheld the workers' rights to unionize. And so now they brought in the union busters. I did a whole thing about it on my last stream. It's insane the lengths to which they go to make sure this union doesn't happen. They make you sit through a video, and you have to go through it. It's an interactive thing where they tell you, oh, we just want to establish a direct connection with our workers through our managers. If you have a problem, come talk to us. You don't need a union. And then they stepped it up. Then all of a sudden there's fucking anti-union posters all over the workroom and the bathrooms, just everywhere. And then they were like, that's not enough. What was going on was the workers after work, because you can't talk about union stuff on the job. You can either do it during your lunch break, during your pee break, or off the clock. The problem
is,
I didn't know that. Those were the rules, because they call that soliciting, right? So what happens was this: the workers effectively don't get breaks or lunch breaks, because this has been a common complaint. The warehouse is so huge. If you start in one corner and it's like, okay, ding, now it's time for lunch. It's so the whole place is so big, you cannot get to the break room in 15 minutes. It's just not possible. There's too much ground to cover. So you're traveling the entire 15 minutes just to turn around and go back to work. Same thing with bathroom breaks. If you get a break, not only is there travel time involved, there's always a line. So there's plenty of people who effectively do not get bathroom breaks.
Right.
So there's really no time to talk to people about why it's good to be in a union. So what they would do is, after they got off the clock, they would wait outside, and there's a traffic light as you're coming down from the building, and then after that it hits the main road. So they would wait at that traffic stop for workers to come down after their workday and talk to them at the stoplight and be like, hey, have you thought about unionizing? So what Amazon did, they brought a work crew from the city to fuck with the stoplight so that as soon as cars got there, it would turn green immediately. So the people standing there wouldn't even have time to talk to the other workers. They would just have to go through the stoplight. It was so bad. It even caused accidents. Like, that's how much they fucked with the stoplight. There was, like, a 3-car collision, and it almost killed someone because the stoplight would just keep going green every time cars would pull up to the stop to make sure that these workers didn't have time to communicate about how good unionizing was, because they understood that the fear-mongering they were doing to, like, the younger workers about, oh, they're going to take the dues out of your pay. You're going to get paid less, and you're going to get nothing for it.
Right.
And the younger workers, they weren't around for when unions actually existed. They don't understand how that works with collective bargaining power and with the ability for the workers to say, hey, look, these are our conditions. You don't meet them. We're fucking striking. They didn't know any of that. That was something the older workers understood. But the older workers are getting phased out. So it's mostly younger people.
Right.
So they
didn't
have the opportunity to try to get these workers to not do it. And then they were like, that's not enough. Then, I don't know if you know this. I know, right? I was like, holy shit. Amazon owns Twitch. I don't know if you know that. They're a subsidiary of
Amazon. Oh,
I
thought I heard that. Yeah.
They were running antitrust ads on Twitch. So if there were younger workers working in this Amazon branch and they were watching Twitch on their break, there would be anti-union ads coming up before they would watch these videos. And it was like management level workers, like the 25 of them that they found going, oh, we don't need no unions. I always wanted to work at Amazon because it's amazing. We get all the benefits. And another guy, he's like, I used to work for the train, whatever, and they had a union. They just took our dues and never did anything for us. I don't need a union. We're perfectly happy. And this ran for like 2 weeks before the Twitch people were like freaking the fuck out going, what are you talking about? This is insane. And eventually they pulled it because of bad PR. But the vote for unionization is coming up. And Amazon is shitting bricks over doing whatever they can to screw their workers out of workers' rights. Just anything at all. Completely crazy.
Oh, my God. See, and from a lazy person's perspective, that's just too much work. Would it not just be easier to just let them unionize? Would it not just be easier?
Well, in terms
I feel
of
like they would.
Is the profit margins. That's really yeah. what comes down to. Well, we'll lose money, and then we'll have to pay our workers better, and this and that. And, like, that's sort of the thing about it. I think what happens is the way that this country is structured, we are looking for opportunities to capitalize on anything, including human suffering. And so it's like, if you can't get paid enough, which most jobs don't offer you a living wage, like, did you see that bullshit with AT&T and McDonald's about the achieve your dreams or whatever?
No. What is this?
So they released a thing. It was like a marketing bit to try to get people to stop complaining about. I think it was when the $15 minimum wage thing was on the table.
Which, obviously, let's be honest, it's not enough. It's barely, I mean, it's three $5 bills, and that's before taxes. Okay, so really, it's probably like two $5 bills and like a couple of ones.
I mean, if you really look at the economics, like my degree is in economics.
Oh, wow.
To have a minimum wage that kept up with inflation as quickly as it's been going up, the minimum wage should be $24 to be as proportionally, like, give us as much spending power as we've had in the past. Like, that's
how I thought it was like $25, but I guess it's something like that. Yeah, $24.
It's because inflation is still going up. So in a year, it's going to be more. You know what I mean?
Right. It doesn't stop.
When that was on the table, Amazon and AT&T were like, oh shit, we don't want our workers, you know, getting all riled up over this. So they released this thing. It's like, you can achieve your dreams working at McDonald's, and we're going to show you how to do it. And it's a budget sheet. And it's so funny because they're so detached from reality. They're like, here's how your McDonald's salary can pay for your dreams. And so what it is they have like, column A is your McDonald's job, and then you're getting minimum wage, and they show you like, okay, every month, this is how much you make. And then they have a thing for like your rent, here's your car payment, so on, and they go down the list. And the totals are, first of all, there's another column that says job number two. So you can't even achieve your dreams with one job. You need a second one. But the totals they put for like rent and stuff are just hilarious.
Right. It's like $300 for rent.
Exactly.
It's like no one lives. No.
Like $50 for food or some shit. You know what I mean? And it adds up. And then at the end, they're like, oh, look. There's like $200 a month expendable income. If you were to save that every month, that's an extra $200. That's like a house and a car and your family vacations and shit like that. Like,
isn't
it was such bullshit. No,
I mean,
like, the reality,
it's like,
you're barely making it. You're not saving no $200.
Right. Well, that's the other thing too, is that just on that alone, if I'm working at McDonald's and you already have to put, in order for me to achieve my dreams with McDonald's, you already have to have a column in there for job number two.
Exactly.
Then that means that you're not a minimum wage is the minimum amount of money you can make to live. Which if there's already a column in there for job number two, that means you're not paying me minimum wage.
Right.
You just it doesn't work.
And that's the thing, that this problem is rampant across the country. So what's happening is people are not getting paid enough. It's getting more and more expensive to live everywhere. Job prospects are drying up. Wages have been stagnating since the 80s, frankly.
Yeah.
And now there's also this environment of, well, there's anything and everything you can capitalize on and make a job out of it. And so people are like, well, scamming people makes money. Fuck it.
And
like,
it does.
It
does.
It's either that or starve, you know? And I think that's why, especially with the downturn of the economy with COVID, there's companies that have just been laying off like crazy. The companies that get monetary incentives not to lay off people are all they're time based. So once that lifts, there's going to be even more layoffs. There's people who are right now. Yeah, there's people right now who know that by like I think it's March, maybe a little later, they are going to be homeless because that's when the moratorium on evictions lets up.
Because we're in Texas, and I know that I believe, okay, I don't know this for a fact. Please, nobody quote me. I don't know if this is 100% true. It could change, actually, by the time that this airs. But at this time, on March 5th, Friday, March 5th, 2021, at 7:17 in the evening, the last I heard, the Texas rent moratoriums and mortgage, I believe it extends to mortgages as well, a moratorium is up at the end of March. Something recently came out that Texas was being Texas and being bullshit and was like, yeah, it's unconstitutional for the CDC and the federal government to tell us what we can and cannot do with rent and stuff. So, and it passed. Of course it passed. But then I heard something else about like, that's not true for the whole country. That it was something about like Texas and like a couple of other states, their rent moratoriums up at the end of March. And then it was like summer over and like by it like extends all the way to June. Is that, I mean, so basically by July is when I think it seems isn't like 40 million people are looking at like being evicted.
So what seems to be happening is that like the government or the federal government doesn't seem to be placing a huge, like they're not putting their foot down definitively and going after states for doing their own thing. That's why Texas has lifted the bans on mask wearing. They lifted the mask mandates here this week because it's the federal government won't actually say, hey, wear a fucking mask, jackass. But yeah, then you got Ted Cruz making anti-masker jokes at CPAC and then going, hey guys, you know what's the funny joke? Remember how I abandoned my constituency during the energy and freezing crisis and I went to Mexico?
That was 2 weeks ago. Like that was like 10 days ago. So
fucking sucked.
Freezing
my stuff.
I know. We had electric. We didn't have water for like 4 or 5 days, you know, and we didn't have, and our power was like, it was on for like 4 hours and then like it went off for 2 days, you know. It was nuts.
It was really, really bad. But of course, did you see all the did you see all the Texas leadership, all the shit they were saying during that? There was like multiple people coming out with like public statements. So we had who was it Greg Abbott? It may have been Greg Abbott. There may have been Ted Cruz did the Mexico thing that pissed people off. There was a mayor, I forget of which area, it was like a little tiny town, but he basically said, oh, your families, are they freezing in their houses and you don't have power or water? Fucking figure it out. That's your responsibility. You need to come up with a game plan. And people were so mad. He basically insinuated that, look, if you don't have a game plan and your family was unprepared for this crisis, that's your fault. You need to try harder. Step it up. Bootstraps, motherfucker. Like, people were so pissed about that. He had to resign.
Rightfully so.
Yeah, fuck that guy. And then we had, I want to say it was Greg Abbott. He was out there saying, come on, Texans, push through, persevere. Don't let the feds come in and get in our business. Like, fuck you. That's exactly why the feds need to be in our business.
Right.
Jesus Christ.
Well, and then speaking of scams, ERCOT. So did you hear anything about ERCOT? That's the energy. It's the energy. Hold on. I'm going to look at it. It's the energy coalition of something or other that's stuff that's important for Texas.
Is this the people who got like 10 or like 5 or 6 figure bills?
No. ERCOT. Hold on. I forget what it's called. Oh, Electric Reliability Council of Texas operates the electric grid and manages the. So that's what Texas's version of that's who runs 80%. I believe it's like 90% of the state uses ERCOT. And then they have subsidiaries, kind of like Encore, stuff like that.
Basically, it's a corporate coalition to keep everything privatized. That's what
right it's been running in and it's exclusive to Texas. Like this mm-hmm. doesn't extend to, you know, like Louisiana. I mean, I think there's a, like some of it, if you look at the map, like some of it goes into like Oklahoma, but it's pretty exclusive.
Some red states also have a similar strategy, but we're separated across lines. You know what I mean? Like we tend to just stay within our state. Other red states might be privatized, but they have like different private companies that handle that. You know what I mean?
Right. But what I was gonna, so ERCOT, they have, so they're like the big guys, right? They're like the big head honchos. They're the ones that, you know, have all those board members that are like, they don't even live here. They live in like Michigan, and you're just like, yeah. It's like 17 of the 25 board members or something, like, don't even live in and haven't for like a while. So that's their guys. But they, so first there's like the renewable energy problem that like conservatives jumped on. I knew that was going to happen. But it really what it is, there's only like 20% of Texas is run by like renewable energy. It's only like 20%. And they didn't winterize the windmills because it's cheaper not to. I mean, well, it's just cheaper not to.
We don't even need to usually. Like my, we actually have family up in New York, and it was shocking how cold the houses here in Texas get. And I was talking to my family up in New York. They're like, well, yeah, because in Texas, you know, the coldest it usually gets from area to area tends to be like low 30s. You guys don't deal with the kind of weather we deal with in winter. So they like build the houses differently. Like the insulation work is completely different. So same thing with like our electricity and like all that stuff. It's just built to withstand temperatures differently. Typically, they build them more towards the heat end of things, which I mean makes sense. But like,
totally makes sense. On. I get it. But also, they didn't winterize them at all. And it's like, well, why didn't you do like anything? Like not even a plastic bag, like nothing. Yeah. You just were like, fuck it. Okay.
They did see it coming. Like these weather reports were coming before we got hit with it.
Like, well. What I read, well, first of all, I would like to take a shout out to the Texas Water, at least the Dallas metro area. That's where I am. They publicly came out, my town, my very small, tiny little town, came out publicly on the city's website during all that and was like, just a reminder, don't drink the water. Like, it's not fit for human consumption. The water coming out of your tap is not fit for human consumption. Sucks. I know. I guess we should have told you sooner, but what can
we
do?
Even get a public announcement. We just got a letter from the water company saying, oh, by the way, I don't drink the water. And this was like days after we lost power. So it was like, I wonder when that happened.
Well, that was annoying because we got it. We didn't even get a letter. You fancy over there. We didn't even get a letter. I had to like look it up on my phone. And it was just like, but it was a boil water thing. And it was like, make sure that you can't, like, the water is not fit for human consumption. Boil it before you bathe, before you drink it, before you use it for, like, any brushing your teeth, like, anything. And first of all, I kind of got caught up in the paradox of, like, well, I don't have water right now, so how am I supposed to boil the water that I don't have with the electricity that I also don't have? So there's that problem. But whatever. But what I found while I was looking all that stuff up about like ERCOT and then like Encore, there's a couple of other ones that I think are like the subsidiaries of, but they're like the people that, you know, are local, I guess, or like to your area that distribute the energy. But what I saw was that Encore, or like, so ERCOT and then Encore, when you go to sign up, like, to who gives, like, you your energy, you can choose. Some places you are able to choose, like, who does that for you. And if you don't know, or if you just, you're just like, oh, I'm just going to go with whoever, you know, I'm told to go with. Like, my neighbors or my family, whoever, you know, whatever. Which is a totally logical thing to do, by the way. But when you went to sign up, if it was through Encore, that was also through ERCOT, how they got around, like, legally in the, like, terms and agreements kind of a thing, was basically they said that when you sign up with us to get your energy with us, you are also agreeing to buy a generator so that in the event of like not unintended consequences, but like unexpected things happening. So like this, what just happened, they cannot be held at fault because you, when you signed up, you agreed to get a generator to offset any sort of, you know, problems that you might have, struggles that you would have. You agreed basically to provide energy for yourself in the event that something, you know, extreme happened. And so that's how they're getting around that.
Ours, we have something similar out here. We had two companies. I think it was Entergy and Gritty. Basically, they don't actually produce power. What they do is they just sort of reroute it, and they are able to offer their customers way cheaper rates than normal because they don't actually have to like house and maintain generators or anything like that. They're just sort of a third party company that provides power as like an acting subsidiary of a company that does have the generators, right?
Right.
But what happened was when the power struggles hit, and what they were doing is they were doing rolling blackouts to make sure like, hey, you've got, you know, power for 4 hours, let's give it to someone else for 4 hours, and so on and so forth. So we weren't all freezing to death. Some people were basically, as far as I understand it, this was a very complex thing, but the best I understand it, they were forced by contract to pay for everybody else's energy. So it was basically treated the same way as like a mutual fund insurance company, which the way that works is some companies can offer you super low rates on insurance because what they say is like, okay, there's basically a pool and everybody pays money into the pool to pay for the insurance. And as long as, you know, we're making enough money, we can offer you really good rates. But if something goes wrong, then we're going to need to up everybody's rates because it's all based on the pool of money. Right. That's basically what they were doing with the electricity. So with the rolling blackouts, even if you didn't have power, you were being charged when everybody else had power. So what happened was there were people who after that happened, their next billing cycle was like 10 grand. 20 grand. One lady took him to court for like $250,000.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. It was super fucked up. Like, Jesus Christ.
Oh my God. When we got our energy bill and I was terrified. I saw that because there were several of those stories I saw like on the news, or not on the news, but like in my news feed, like on Reddit and, you know, just like through Twitter and, you know, the news app or whatever, like all this stuff. And it was like I saw several stories. So I started getting like, I have anxiety, and that didn't help my anxiety exactly. So when that bill came, I was like, oh my gosh. I was expecting it to be like some insane, you know, like $40,000, something crazy. It wasn't that bad. It was only like $300 and something. But still, on average, like we don't use, it's just the two of us and like some dogs. So it's like that's still a lot for two people, like over $300 electric bill for 1 month. That's normally it's like $90.
You know what's crazy is those same companies, Entergy and Gritty, I was like, I've heard of those guys before. Where have I heard of them?
Yeah.
When I was doing my traveling sales job and I would work in Sam's Club, one of the traveling road shows was Gritty, the other one was Entergy. They're waiting at the door stopping people saying, hey, you want to save money on your energy bill? running an audio only podcast called the Laughs and Rec Podcast. And the whole concept was I started during lockdown. I was going stir crazy. I needed an outlet, you know? So I started it up. I literally put my first episode out in about 14 hours from beginning to end.
Got
all the platforms going, everything. Facebook, Twitter page. And now it's actually evolved quite a bit. Right now, the way my content's being produced is I produce video and audio content weekly. So there's always something going on. Right now, my audio content is mostly mini episodes because I'm actually going back to school to get an alternative teaching certificate to become a teacher. So my time is a little bit more limited. But I do release weekly episodes. They're mini episodes, single topics, single segment issues. Sometimes they're reacting. Most of them are reacting to funny videos I find where people say crazy shit. Like I said, the next one's going to be about gun control, and it's going to be a pretty new video. How awesome guns are. And I'm like, that worked that way. But so that's my audio only content. I also produce full length episodes that are four distinct segments, each one a little bit different. And I mean, I talk about everything. It's literally a variety show where I talk about whatever I want. I had an entire saga where I read Onision's third book, and it was trash, and I tore it apart, and it was so much fun.
That's my God.
Four episodes right there. I did a whole segment about Greek myths, and I read the myths, and I kind of made fun of them a little bit. It wasn't even just, there was one Greek myth, there was an Egyptian myth in there, there was an African myth, there was all kinds of stuff. I did a whole other segment where I did like a taste testing of some food, and you know, there's all kinds of stuff in there. So there's definitely in there was something in there for everybody. Sometimes I stress social issues, sometimes just fun stuff. And then now that my time's a little more limited, those full length episodes come out just as I produce them, just because they take so much time. Like one episode, probably I put in like 6-7 hours in like just post. That's not even including, you know. So it's very time consuming for me. So those come out as I go, but there's usually the mini episodes for audio. As far as video is concerned, I run a Twitch channel as well under the same name. Right now, it's a Laughs and Rack Pod, if you look it up on Twitter, or Twitch rather. I do 3 streams a week. I do Tuesday, Wednesday, and Sunday. And they're all themed. So there's again, something for everybody. Tuesdays are wheel streams, where I literally put up a wheel on the screen, and each segment of the wheel has a different topic. Some of the topics that are regular, I do Karen meltdown videos, where you watch Karens freak the fuck out and make fun of it. We do right-wing chuds. We pull up, like, some Ben Shapiro or some PragerU shit, and we make fun of them. There's, oh, God, Tate Watch. You gotta watch Tate Watch. Tate Watch, there's a kickboxer named Andrew Tate. He is the stupidest, most egotistical person I've ever even seen. Like, some of his takes are so insane. He literally believes that, like, women having their drinks spiked and, like, getting date rape, he thinks that's fake. He doesn't think it's real. He thinks intergenerational wealth is stupid. Like, he thinks he can beat up Spider-Man.
Is this a real person?
A real person.
No.
There's a whole segment dedicated to just looking at his antics. We sometimes bring up things like, of course, the making fun of bad self-defense and martial arts videos.
Right.
So there's all kinds of stuff on Tuesdays. It's a variety stream. We spin the wheel, whatever comes up, we talk about it. A new one we've added is conspiracy theories. So that one's a lot of fun. And then Wednesdays are general news, current events, and deep dive topics. So we cover like what's been going on in the past week. We talk about it. I always try to include like some interesting stories, like the relevant stuff, and then some funny stories. I did one about a Danish cartoon about a guy with a long sentient penis. Like he could literally like, pick it up, like, pick shit up. Like he did construction work with his dick. Like it was so funny. My buddy Jim was in on that stream. He's like, "What is happening right now?"
It's not. Oh my God. That's when you just look at your friend and you're like, this is what we do. Yeah.
But after we do the current events, we always do a deep dive. And it's focusing in on one of the topics that I just listed off this coming week. I'm still kind of deciding, but I think it'll probably have to do something with like probably because I just did conspiracy theories and right wing chuds. So we might go to something. See, I haven't quite decided. I might do another martial arts one because that one was a lot of fun. We had so much fun with those martial arts videos, and I've got a ton of them, so I'm not running out anytime soon. But I always announce what the deep dive topic of the week is going to be on Twitter, so if you just follow me, you'll know. And then Sundays, I bring on guests, and we play games, like actual card games. Like this one here is a lot of fun. It's called Shit Happens. If you guys haven't heard of it, it's a really fun card game.
Yeah.
Like you got scenarios with numbers on them, and they're ranked from 1 to 100 in increments of 0.5. And then the point of the game is to try to guess like a various scenario. You've got 3 already on the board, and you try to guess the scenario you draw next where it goes in the line. Like you
get
10. And so like I bring on guests, and we play games like that. We also have like the Awkward Storyteller, which is literally an improv game about storytelling. All kinds of fun stuff. We also do like open discussion topics. I'm actually have two of my awesome streaming friends, Jim from Friday Night Music Party and Chevy Pendergrass from the Lean with Greatness podcast. He talks a lot about like black empowerment and you know, defunding the police and BLM issues. We're all going to be on stream, probably talking about a variety of different topics, just whatever happens to fall in there. I'm probably going to do something about like what do you guys think about anti-porn people? And we'll probably have a whole discussion
Perfect.
About that. Yeah, so like there's a lot
Boo.
Going on. Oh yeah, exactly. So that's my my streaming schedule. Actually, I also co-host on another podcast where it's all about MMA. It's called Cage My IQ. Like I said, I've done martial arts for a long time. Part of that was MMA training. So in that podcast, what I do is for most of the weeks, we're talking about like news and sometimes we cover minor fight card results and just do like a recap on how the fights went. But we actually just did one yesterday about the big UFC 259 fight card coming up tomorrow. And we walked through each of the main fight card fights and we gave our predictions and kind of broke down how we thought it was going to go. So I give my expertise in that field on that podcast. And it's usually a lot of fun. I try to, you know, throw some dick jokes in there when I can to make it a little more entertaining. So, yeah, as far as where you can find me, I engage a lot on Twitter, at LaughsRec, if you want to look that up. I have a Facebook page. I don't spend too much time on it, but you can also send me a message there. I'll try to respond to it. I have an email, laughsrecpod@gmail.com. Usually I respond to like, you know, interview requests or like guest spots or even just like viewer stuff. You find my link tree on Twitter. It's in the description. It's where all of my audio only podcasts and my Twitch channel are available. If you're looking for the audio stuff, literally anywhere you get your podcasts. Like I'm on like 12 or 15 different platforms at this point because Anchor's awesome. So
right.
You want to find that. And then, of course, Twitch is where all my video content happens. I'm also going to put the Cage My IQ stuff on there because he goes through his own Facebook page for that. So, yeah, I'm kind of all over the place. I also try to do, you know, some of these guest spots here and there and you know, bring on the guest stuff that I've been on their shows. I want to bring them onto my stuff, especially like the Twitch stuff where I got all these fun tools and toys and I can share screens and it's a lot of fun. So, yeah, that's a lot, but I'm very, very active in my hobby here. It's funny. Every time I talk to my family about it, my mom's all like, are you getting paid for that yet? You making money yet? I'm like, no, mom, it's still a hobby. Thanks
right.
For that. That was great.
Anyway. I feel that.
Oh, man.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's awesome. I'm definitely going to have to check out a lot of your stuff. Cause that Sunday show sounds really fun though. But conspiracies, oh, I love conspiracies. Like a healthy amount, though. Not like, I'm not like, they're all lizard people, but like
smattering. So what I was trying to stay away from was like voter fraud stuff and like QAnon stuff, because that's like, you know, everybody's pretty much heard that.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I tried to do like a good mix of stuff. We had like some, the microchip stuff, the antibodies. Oh, Satan's and everything kind of stuff. Like it was a pretty healthy mix of all kinds of stuff. It was a good stream. It was pretty fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, that sounds that's very, very me. I like that stuff. It's fun to play with in my brain. Well, thank you so much, Miles. I enjoyed having you. You made me laugh. You brought up some really good points and you taught me some stuff, which I'm always down to learn. I love to learn. I'm a weirdo. I hope so. Thank you so much. I will have to get you back on. I promise. I don't make any promises because I don't know if I'll be able to keep those. I can't promise that I won't keep you for 4 hours next time either. But
my average stream time is usually around 7 hours. So it's.
It was so great to have you. You will be coming back on. I will track you down. I'm going to need you to come back on and talk about all these different kinds of things that you have a lot more knowledge in than I do. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. I had a great time. This was a lot of fun.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
So that was the end of part one of our relationship with scams. With Miles Long from the Laughs and Rock podcast. So great. Love him so much. He's so funny. Love talking to him. Hope you guys enjoyed it too. As usual, thank you guys so much for listening. If you could like and subscribe if you're listening on YouTube, rate and review us on iTunes. It really helps the podcast, you guys. Yeah, so that would be super helpful. Comment. Send us an email at mpweirdo or at manicpixieweirdopodcast@protonmail. If you liked this topic, or you have a topic that you'd like to cover, you'd like me to cover, or if you've been scammed, or any of those things, just shoot me an email at manicpixieweirdo@protonmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at @mpweirdopodcast, or on Instagram at @_main_weirdo1. That's on Instagram. You can, as always, you can find us on all of the various Sentence Injury podcast platforms, wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, all the places. So check us out. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, be kind and stay weird. Bye, guys.